Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. 2 weeks ago, House Republicans voted to cut $460 million for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. The move was part of a package of budget cuts totaling $61 billion in the current fiscal year. The legislation now moves to the Senate. There's other legislation pending that would ban federal funding of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. That's what we want to talk about today. And joining us to talk about the rationale for funding and cutting funding to public media is Patrick Butler. He's the president and CEO of the Association of Public Television Stations. Welcome to the show, Patrick.
Thank you, Ann.
Also with us is Mike Gonzalez. He's Vice President of Communications for the Heritage Foundation. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Thank you, Ann.
It should be said that we also invited GOP Representative Jim Jordan of Ohio. He's one of six U.S. lawmakers who have introduced legislation to cut all funding for NPR and PBS, and also freshman Republican Senator Rob Portman. Senator Portman declined the invitation. Representative Jordan has ignored repeated invitations to join the conversation, so we don't know if he wants to or not. I want to refer listeners, if you want to know, have details about how the funding cuts would impact WOSU, to go to WOSU.org and read a statement by Station General Manager Tom Ryland. Mike, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting provides some funding for PBS and NPR, but much more of its funding goes to public television and radio stations that are members of PBS or NPR. In fact, most of that goes to public television. Many of those stations broadcast in and cover rural areas that are otherwise ignored by commercial media. What do you think, what about the impact on those areas of the United States?
Well, first of all, the funding itself is part of the problem because, as you know, the local stations then funnel money to NPR, and it is not very clear. So right there, the funding becomes very, very murky. But I want to question your premise. I don't think that these communities will go without information on radio because if there's a demand, somebody will want to make some money out of it, and somebody will fill that will supply what that demand needs. And even if NPR, as people have said, relies solely on its membership model. Mm-hmm. You can then continue to fulfill that demand. Your model is good. You don't need taxpayer money to take news to those rural areas. You can just go, and then after that, you can become all you want.
So, Patrick, if there's a demand in the rural areas for this kind of programming, why isn't the demand being met commercially and otherwise?
Well, because the profit motive rules out really good service to rural America and small town America, because the costs of providing service are substantially higher in rural America, and the economic base to support this kind of programming is very limited there. When Congress decided in 1967 to create this public broadcasting system, they did it in part to guarantee that there would be universal service to every part of the country, so that the news and the education and the cultural programming that public broadcasting was supposed to provide would go to places where it was both economical and uneconomical to receive. And so that's been the glory of the system for these past 40 years, and we'd like to continue it that way.
So, Mike, the funding cuts will affect everybody that's involved in public media, but hurt some more than others. And you're saying that's not a problem, that the something will fill that gap.
Well, I'm not saying that people getting hurt is not a problem. All I'm saying is, look, Craig Newmark, the founder of Craigslist, who knows a little bit about successful business models, has said your donor model is good. This is something that will succeed, and if you know, Mr. Butler questions the profit motive, which you know, actually I do think the profit motive will fill in and fill a need. But let's say the profit motive, let's say there's a market failure and it does not fill that need, you can go 100% to membership support. Now let's say that doesn't work either, and I question both those premises. You know what? Then these rural stations have fallen victim to what's happened to NPR. And you have a problem with NPR, and I'm talking about its liberal bias. And that's why you have every Republican voting to cut the funding. You can't address this problem with PR.
What about the changes? Patrick, your resume includes a stint as speechwriter and associate editor of the White House editorial office for President Gerald R. Ford. You also were legislative director and chairman of the impeachment task force during its impeachment proceedings against President Nixon. You have your own Republican chops, in other words. Republicans in Congress these days say that federal funding for public media is dangerous. As Mike Gonzalez put it in his January blog, it is dangerous for government to fund journalism. What is your response to that? And what is Republican about? Is it a partisan issue at this point?
Well, I don't think it is, and just to correct the record a little bit, there wasn't an up or down vote on public broadcasting funding specifically within the context of this continuing resolution that mm-hmm. passed the House a couple of weeks ago. It was an up or down on the entire spending package, and it was largely along partisan lines. But I will say that having worked for President Ford and having worked briefly for President Reagan, they were both in the end, great supporters of public broadcasting. Under President Reagan, the funding for public broadcasting went up about 31% over his 8 years in office. And we just had a piece here in the Washington Post on Sunday by Ken Burns, in which he recounted a conversation he'd had with President Reagan just before the Civil War went on public television. And Reagan was so excited to see the public-private partnership that had made that documentary possible.
But back then, we're talking about rabbit ears and three or four channels max for most people. So a lot has changed since then, right, Mike?
And President Reagan and President Ford are not with us anymore. And, you know, they were president decades ago. We have a problem now. And Patrick Butler, listen, I'm talking as a friend of NPR. You are doing harm to yourself if you don't admit that you have a problem at NPR. Conservatives don't trust you. All of your critics are conservative. The majority of your critics are conservative. I don't have Republican chops. I'm not talking as a Republican. I am talking as a conservative. And you have it is now a partisan issue. The people who try to come to your aid are liberals like George Soros, MoveOn.org. If you move to address this problem, you will be doing something to help yourselves. But if you deny it or you try to paper over it with PR, you will just be doing yourself a great disservice.
Patrick, do you agree? Or?
Mm-hmm. Well, no, I don't. Two things to that statement by Mike. One, there is a new poll out just this morning from Peter Hart and Linda Duvall. It's a bipartisan poll that suggests that public broadcasting is supported all across the ideological spectrum, including even among Tea Party members and certainly Republicans and certainly conservatives. And the record of public opinion polling over the last many years has been that people across the spectrum value and trust what they see and hear on public broadcasting. The second thing, as far as NPR is concerned specifically, I think it's important to understand that with all of the controversy that's emerged over the last few months, there has been a response from NPR. They're not papering over the problems that they are that they've encountered. They've got a reform program underway, and I think you can find some episodes in any organization that's been in existence for 40 years which are regrettable, but I think the American people have overwhelmingly decided that public broadcasting is something of tremendous value to them, which they want to see continued.
And let me briefly address that poll, since Patrick brought it up. Patrick, I read the poll this morning. How many times does it mention PBS? 25 times. How many times does it mention NPR? Once. The poll itself is called the PBS Voter Survey. It was commissioned by you, and it asks very leading questions. This poll, I urge all listeners to go to it and read it themselves. Look at
question. So do I.
Look at question 11. This is not a credible poll. Look, Pat. Look, there's a problem with NPR. Okay, you have a, who does?
Well, let me ask you. Do you listen to NPR?
Yeah, I listen to NPR. I listen to MSNBC. I read the New York mm-hmm. Times. I'm a consumer.
Right.
You know, I am a journalist of many years. First of all, let me go back a few ticks. There's a problem with government journalism, okay? There's a catch-22.
Of government funding of journalism.
Government. No, I'll call it government journalism.
Okay.
And here is the catch, okay? Anything that receives voter money should be accountable to the voter, should be accountable. And who represents the voter? The elected representative. Now, the problem is journalists should never, ever be accountable to elected representatives, to politicians. I've been a journalist all over the world. You know, 5 years in Europe, 10 in Asia, I have seen many countries, including Europe, not just the third world, where there is government journalism. It never ends well.
Let me ask you this. Chartered by Congress, Stars and Stripes in 2009 received one-third of its $50 million operating budget from the federal funding through the Department of Defense. Should government fund that journalism?
No, I don't think it should. I'm against government journalism.
Okay. Studies have also shown that roughly 40 to 45% of NPR listeners consider themselves conservative.
I am a conservative, and
right.
I listen to NPR
and
religiously.
Would you miss it?
Would I miss it?
Yeah.
I won't miss it because you will survive without government funding because you have a good model you should rely on.
What?
That model is voluntary. Tax is not voluntary. Tax is coercive. And conservatives have a major problem being coerced into giving money to NPR. Until you address that issue, because of its perceived bias, I'll let Patrick talk, but let me just tick off a few things. Who does national security for you? Tina Temple Reston, who authored a book with the head of the ACLU. Who does the Supreme Court? Nina Totenberg. Who does, you know, campaign financing? Peter Overby, who came from Common Cause. You had Daniel Shore on for many years. Who is your conservative commentator?
I'm sorry, what did you say about Nina Totenberg and campaign financing?
No. Peter Overby is the one that does campaign financing.
Okay.
He came from Common Cause. Common Cause is a group of the left.
So what about the accusation that Mike is making, Patrick, that there is this taint, he's saying, of liberalism over NPR? And it's having a trickle-down effect to everything else.
Yeah. Well, again, it is, you know, while Mike is certainly entitled to his point of view on this, it is not shared by the majority of even conservative people in the country. I mean, there is a, we are in a democracy here, and people are overwhelmingly saying they value what public broadcasting is doing. I would say further that it's really important to understand that the contribution that people are making to public broadcasting is a little over a dollar per citizen for all of the educational and informational and cultural programming that is provided, including a wonderful service in the K-12 classrooms of America and so forth and so on. Here, this is hardly coercive, and people are saying in this latest poll that they would like to see funding for public broadcasting actually increased. I mean, 30% of them say increase it, and 49% say at least keep it where it is.
We have to take a break. We'll be right back. My guests are Patrick Butler. He's CEO and president of the Association of Public Television Stations, and also Mike Gonzalez of the Heritage Foundation, where he's vice president of communications. We'll be right back. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.
Discover more about All Sides with Ann Fisher online at WOSU.org/allsides. You can listen to new and archived shows from all the guests and topics. You can also find All Sides on Facebook and Twitter, subscribe to podcasts, and preview upcoming programs. Discover more about WOSU and All Sides with Ann Fisher at WOSU.org/allsides.
Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from Dine Originals Columbus, hosting Dine Originals Week March 7th through the 13th. More information about the local chefs, global flavors, and menu options from 51 member restaurants can be found at DineOriginalsColumbus.com.
32 degrees in downtown Columbus. Sunshine today and a high of 45 degrees. Clear skies tonight, a low of 29. Sunny skies for Wednesday and a high of 42. And clear skies Wednesday night, a low of 21. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about efforts to eliminate, cut, or eliminate funding for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. My guests this hour is Patrick Butler. He is president and CEO of the Association of Public Television Stations, and also Mike Gonzalez. He's vice president of communications for the Heritage Foundation. If you'd like to join the conversation, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Make sure you tell the screener if you are for government funding or against it for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. I want to go back to something Mike said and hear your response to it, Patrick. Mike, in his blog, and he reiterated it on the air, that said that it's dangerous for governments to fund journalism, that he's been around the world and governments control journalism that they fund. What is your response to that?
Well, that's the reason that Congress created the Corporation for Public Broadcasting rather than giving money directly to local stations and so forth, was to create a firewall that was intended to eliminate the potential interference or influence of the government directly upon the news gathering process or the editorial process for other kinds of programming. And again, that has worked extremely well over the last 40 years. And people, again, not only in the survey today, but in one survey after another over a period of many years, have said that they believe that public broadcasting provides the most objective and trusted and valued news of anybody that they survey. And so I think this system has actually worked very well. I mean, I understand Mike's point, but I think this system, as it has worked in practice, has worked very well for a long time.
And listen, if you're going to keep mentioning the survey, I'm going to keep mentioning the fact that it mentions PBS 25 times, which people associate with Big Bird, and your questions make people associate with Big Bird, and it mentions NPR once. And a lot of your problem, I'm talking as a friend, a lot of your problem has to do with NPR. Now let's go back to what the Corporation for Public Broadcasting does. It acts as a firewall. It insulates NPR from political pressure, and that has been the problem, because that's the problem. NPR's bias has metastasized. The problem with journalism is that it shouldn't come under political pressure. But any group that touches taxpayer money should be accountable to the taxpayer. That is a basic democratic principle. That is the catch-22 that makes government journalism untenable. If you get taxpayer money, you should be accountable to the voter. But if you're a journalist, you should never, ever, ever be accountable to a politician. That's why it doesn't work.
Patrick?
Well, I mean, again, plainly, it does work. It's worked for a very long time, and people are more than satisfied with the product that they're getting. I mean, again, Mike can have his point of view and his philosophy about this, and that's fine. But Americans, by overwhelming majorities, don't agree with him. And it's not just this poll. It's polls going back many years. I mean, they all show the same thing.
Patrick, NPR has taken a back seat in the public fight to retain federal funding for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And earlier this month, NPR endorsed the Joint Defense, the new Temporary Public Media Association, which you represent today. NPR is involved, however. So to what extent? Why is it taking a back seat?
Well, I'm not sure I would agree that it's actually taken a back seat here. I mean, as Mike is saying, it's front and center with a lot of people on Capitol Hill. But I think what we're trying to do with the Public Media Association is to speak with a single, consistent voice about the value of public broadcasting and trying to champion this this service that we provide to the American people in a very consistent and cohesive way. One of the ways we've done this is to create this grassroots website called 170millionamericans.org, which has generated hundreds of thousands of contacts with Congress already from interested viewers and listeners of public broadcasting over the last couple of weeks. And this is an extraordinary outpouring of support and activity from people who plainly care about continuing this service.
And you were right in your question. The Public Media Association was formed so NPR, which is damaged goods on the Hill, would take a back seat in the PR fight that you're now undertaking. Here's the problem where NPR doesn't work and where public broadcasting doesn't work. The big debate, the big political and philosophical debate we're having in this country right now and have had for many years is over the size of government. NPR, the people who work at NPR are public servants. It's public radio. They're going to side with the big government, just like you find very few pacifists in the Army. People who go into NPR or public journal or government journalism think that the profit motive, as Patrick put it, will taint journalism. That will
I didn't say that, Mike.
No, okay. You didn't say that, but that will make them side with the government side against the profit side. And that is the political debate we're having right now. It is not partisan as in the case of party politics, although because Democrats are on the side of big government and Republicans tend to be on the side of smaller government, it turns to be party political. But it's much more than that. It's a philosophical side, and people at NPR side with the big government side.
Patrick?
Well, again, I mean, Mike's entitled to his opinion, but the facts are different than that. I mean, I'm not sure how many times it's appropriate to say that people overwhelmingly disagree with Mike's conclusions across the ideological spectrum, and the fact that. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting receives some public funds, while it also receives, on average $6 in private donations for every dollar in federal funding. It is the kind of public-private partnership that people have always said this is the kind of thing we need.
Mike, public media right now is banned from commercializing. In other words, should it be permitted to commercialize, loosen the reins on underwriting and that kind of thing and compete more fully with commercial radio, like Clear Channel?
As I said,
you don't have any problem with
your
that.
Your membership model works. I think it's a good model. You should stick to it. If Patrick wants to keep going back to the thin reed of this poll that you had, I just ask, does he deny that all your critics on the Hill are Republicans? Look, your whole and all of your supporters are Democrats. Your lead-in was about how this has become a partisan issue. George Soros, who is a liberal, just gave you $2 million. Should he ask for his money back? MoveOn.org, which is a very well-known liberal organization, has organized a campaign to save NPR.
Patrick? I beg your pardon.
Go ahead.
Do I have the floor? Mm-hmm. I do disagree with the proposition that this is all Democrats versus all Republicans. I think if this provision to defund public broadcasting ever does come up to an up or down vote on its own, that we will have substantial Republican support in both the House and the Senate. I mean, we haven't had an opportunity to do that yet, and I think if we ever do, there will be a bipartisan majority in favor of saving public broadcasting.
Let's get to some callers now, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Don't forget to tell the screener if you're for the public funding of public media or against it. 614-292-8513. And Matt from Columbus, you support federal funding for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Yes, I do. And I guess I would agree that NPR is liberal only insofar as it's my position that it is a liberal model to examine both sides of the issues that we have to deal with, as opposed to attempting to suppress ones with which we agree. But Mike, I think, needs to measure his distance from center on NPR as opposed to the other way around. And I guess I find it somewhat ironic that Heritage isn't so adamant about the use of public funds for such private uses as school vouchers, and the state of Ohio Republicans have no trouble taking public dollars into the private corporation for development that they are attempting to establish without, shall we say, accountability to the public, so that the few dollars that we're spending for really balanced coverage, I think, are very well spent.
Actually, I'm entirely consistent. Our support for public vouchers, for private vouchers, means that to give the poorest amongst us a choice of which school, to, the same choice that I have, the same choice that the President of the United States has, should be given to the poorest people amongst us.
Well, actually, in Ohio, they're proposing changing that and opening it up to everybody. So would it, you'd feel the same way if it was opened up to everybody, school vouchers?
Well, I mean, as long as it gives people choice, it is really about the, I mean, this program would be really about the poor. Would allow them to have a choice not to put kids in the rotten schools in their neighborhood and aspire to something better.
614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu. And David, you oppose federal funding for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I actually have a comment, an observation, and a quick question if I can get them all in. First off, the comment I would say is that it should be called taxpayer-funded, not government-funded and not public-funded, because there are no – the government doesn't have any money other than what the taxpayers pay. And my observation would be that between Michael and Patrick, although I don't know either one of them, I would say it's very generational. I would say that there's probably two decades in age probably there, and what I feel is with Patrick, he's very much like my parents. They want to keep these dinosaurs alive, even though they're not producing any funds, whether it be the Federal Postal Service or the public broadcasting system or the public school system that the last caller brought
okay.
up. These are entities that were formed, you know, several decades ago. They are failing us. They are draining us. And then my question would be to Patrick. You've started an association or a new organization that is between the public and the public funded, as you call it, or the private sector. What is your role in that, and what type of financial benefit do you stand? And I'll take my answers off the air.
Okay. Thanks, David, for your call. Patrick?
Well, you've hurt my feelings a little bit, David, by calling me an old man, but that's all right. The whole point of public broadcasting here, as far as the educational mission for which we were originally founded is concerned, is making sure that the generation of very young people in the United States is given the opportunity to achieve and to excel through the education system. Now there are again reams of good research going back over many years about how Sesame Street and other programs of that type have been quite instrumental in helping children get ready to read, ready to learn, ready to do everything that they need to do in school to succeed. I was the chairman of the Maryland Public Television Foundation for 6 years before coming to this job, and we have a ThinkPort online learning platform that both Governor Ehrlich, a Republican, and Governor O'Malley, a Democrat, and the chief state school officer who has served them both give a lot of credit for raising student achievement scores to among the highest in the nation for the students of Maryland. And in terms of the whatever compensation I get from the Public Media Association, I haven't gotten an extra dime for that. It's just a matter of our trying to join forces and make the best case we can to Congress.
I know that most of the callers right now support taxpayer funding for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, but I know that there are lots of other people out there who are listening who do not. So to keep it balanced, I want to hear from folks who oppose it and people who are supportive of it. 614-292-8513. We'll keep trying to clear the line so that people who oppose it can get through. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Peter, you're on the air. You're from Columbus, and you support public funding of the for the Corporation of Public Broadcasting.
I do, and I would just like to make three quick points and then take reactions off the air. The first point is Patrick is absolutely right on the poll. Not only is it true that NPR, not just PBS, but NPR is one of the most highly credible, or the most highly credible news source in repeated polls conducted by the Pew Research Center, but I think I am right that it's the only news outlet that's actually increased its credibility over a long period of time. The second thing I want to say is that compared to other countries, our investment in public media is actually trivial. I think it's about $1.83 per taxpayer in the United States. It's over $20 per citizen in Canada and over $80 in the United Kingdom. So we could actually have a substantially more robust public media with an investment. Even if we doubled our investment, we would still be way behind other countries or way ahead of other countries in terms of how private our public media really are. And the third thing I want to say is the fact that the Republicans in Congress are opposed to, many of them may be opposed to public media funding, really reflects the evolution of the Republican Party, not where most Americans are. In fact, I believe that in a lot of rural America, it is only the public radio station that is a locally operated news outlet for the community. And you would find legislators in those districts, which are overwhelmingly Republican, to be usually supportive of those media because without them, there would be no local news to speak of.
But they're not, Peter, in Congress.
We just had an election in which the public, the American public, voted overwhelmingly for Republicans. They won a land. It's something that hadn't been seen in decades. So that Republican Party, which you said has moved to the right, has the country with them. And
this is absolute nonsense. The people who voted in the last election were demographically a hugely different sample of the American people than who voted 2 years earlier.
Well, you may call democracy nonsense.
So you're saying that it's not
talking your interpretation is propagandistic.
Look, you may call what happened. You may have a beef with democracy, but we had an election.
I have no beef with democracy.
Hang on, Peter. Let Michael talk.
And that's what happened. And now let's go back to the funding. It's $500 million. Okay, they were only able to identify $61 billion in cuts. $500 million is a lot of money, and it's a huge chunk of $61 billion. Where else are we going to cut? It is not infinitesimally small. It's $500 million, folks. That's a lot of money.
We're going to take another break. Peter or Brian or who am I talking to? Peter, thanks for your call. When we get back, we'll get to more callers who are for and against the funding for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Listen to local news from the award-winning WOSU News team and national news from NPR on the new 89.7 NPR News. And be sure to enjoy the best in classical music on the new Classical 101. Classical music all day, every day. It's all news on 89.7 NPR News and all classical on Classical 101. For more information and to stream our services online, visit WOSU.org.
This is 89.7 NPR News, and in 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, Hour 2 of All Sides begins with analysis of the history and political context of the Libyan uprising. Join us for that discussion beginning at 11 on 89.7 NPR News.
Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from the estate of Donald R. Glancy, whose life was enriched by public radio and television and whose bequest seeks to encourage others to discover WOSU public media.
There are many ways to get the latest local news. Follow WOSU News on Twitter or find WOSU on Facebook. Get headlines delivered to your email by subscribing to our Daily News Loop e-newsletter. You can sign up at WOSU.org/email. Sunny skies for your Tuesday today, a high of 45 degrees. Clear skies tonight, a low of 29. More sunshine for Wednesday and a high of 42. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. My guests this hour, Mike Gonzalez. He's Vice President of Communications for the Heritage Foundation. Mike, thanks again for joining us today.
Oh, thank you, Ann.
Also, Patrick Butler. He is President and CEO of the Association of Public Television Stations. Patrick, thanks again for being with us.
Thank you, Ann.
If you have a question or comment, 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Make sure you tell the screener if you're for or against the public funding for the CPB. Patrick, I wanted to get at an issue and understand fully. Why is it that rural stations that serve predominantly rural areas, can't compete commercially? Why couldn't they start to sell ads and that sort of thing and be able to compete at that level with the existing commercial broadcast entities?
Well, that would take a change in an act of Congress that created the public broadcasting system. We are created as a non-commercial, non-profit organization, and so we can't, under the law, start taking commercials and doing the other things that our friends in the commercial media do and have done for decades. If Congress wanted to re-examine the issue of how public broadcasting ought to be structured and examine whether some greater flexibility along the lines of accepting commercials and so forth were appropriate. I mean, that's a conversation we'd be happy to have. But just saying that we shouldn't be funded by the federal government, and yet we're restricted by this law for our corporate structure here, mm-hmm. is just to impose a death sentence on public broadcasting, so, whether it's small or large.
So if that act of Congress did occur, would it have to occur concurrently with these proposed budget cuts, or could these stations survive for a period of time until they could get up and running and commercialize themselves more?
Well, the smaller ones surely could not. I mean, some of the larger ones might be able to, but then you destroy a system which has made this entire enterprise possible here. Some of the smaller stations pay, all the smaller stations pay some fees to PBS and NPR to get the kind of programming that they want to provide to their viewers and listeners. I mean, that's the way the system works. If you cut off a large part of that system because it's not economical to serve them, then even the big fish don't survive. And so it's a systemic issue here. And if we want to have a real conversation about how public broadcasting ought to be configured going forward, we're happy to have that conversation, but just pulling the plug on us is certainly not the way to do that. And 170 million Americans are relying on what we do every week, and I think we ought to have a little pause in the process here to consider what 170 million people actually think about this.
Mike, what about that point at which, if the funding fails, the smaller stations with less economy of scale would fall immediately? They depend that much. Their budget depends so much more on the funding than, say, a larger station. What could be there to buoy them until they could get up and running as commercial entities, assuming that act of Congress occurred?
You keep bringing that up because it is a vulnerable link.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I, if I were you, I wouldn't go to commercial. If I were you, I would stick with the membership model, which works. Okay, but here's the problem. Mm-hmm. If you want to get taxpayers' money, Patrick, you've done this to yourselves. You know, you conservatives don't trust you. And you can say all you want about the poll. Conservatives don't trust you. And you know, I've given you a lot of evidence why that is the case. As I said, you have people who cover again, to repeat, the person who does counterterrorism is Dina Temple Raston, who's authored a book, okay, with the head of the ACLU. You had Daniel Sharon for many years. We don't think that you're unbiased. We think you're biased. And when you ask taxpayers to pay for you, you know, that is a big problem. And as long as you keep denying it and trying to cover the sun with a finger, you're not going to really address this problem.
Patrick?
Well, I mean, again, Mike's entitled to his opinion, but that he hasn't cited one scrap of evidence that all conservatives are opposed to the funding of public broadcasting, and both I and some of your callers have referred to research from the Pew Research Center, from the Roper Poll, from Peter Hart and Linda DeVall, and many others over the years where this embrace of public broadcasting goes clear across the ideological spectrum.
I cite as evidence an NPR report about 45 minutes ago on WOSU that said that this had become a partisan issue. I mean, I cite as evidence NPR. You said in the lead-in to this debate that it has become a partisan issue. That's all.
Okay. We have an email from Kelly. She supports public funding of public media. She writes, "My tax dollars go toward a myriad of things that I strongly oppose, such as the Iraq War. Therefore, why is NPR being targeted?" We have an email from a listener who opposes the funding. He or she writes, "I am a conservative. I live way," that's capital, "out in the country. I was listening to WOSU this morning on my free AM radio. The thrust seems to be that public radio is intended to provide a means for rural America to stay connected. I'm not sure what that means. With a simple AM radio, I have the ability to get to many dozens of radio stations. I find the excuse for NPR to exist as a means for us poor old rural Americans to stay connected insulting to rural Americans. That is totally absurd." So did you want to clarify that at all, Patrick, what you mean by that?
Well, I mean, if your caller wants to go to other information sources, they're certainly available, and he's welcome to do it. I think NPR does provide some really good in-depth coverage of local, national, and international issues, which you can't get everywhere in rural America, and where I think it's very important to provide this service. I will say further that when it comes to the expenditure of taxpayer dollars, leaving aside what people think about the coverage of news and so forth, again, a Roper poll that's been conducted for the last 7 years in a row finds that public broadcasting is the second best use of taxpayer dollars, according to taxpayers themselves, second only to national defense.
And if I could just make a little pitch for WSU. We are now on FM, 89.7 FM. To that listener, I might not be able to get us out in the country, though. I don't know. 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Mike, regarding the email from Kelly, she says she spent her tax dollars go toward a lot of things that she doesn't support, but that as a group, she goes along with it. Therefore, why is NPR being targeted?
National defense is in the Constitution as one of the duties of a national government. Policing the streets is a legitimate duty of a government. Keeping the peace, all these things, journalism is not. You know, even the Washington Post, who's a friend of public broadcasting, says it is in the nice to have category only. And here's what it said in an editorial on Saturday. There are worthy things that government is no longer going to be able to do regarding public broadcasting. We're broke, folks. It's $500 million. In the age of thousands and thousands of TV stations and radio stations and the Internet, why should the government be giving $500 million to one entity?
So, Patrick, why is public media important to our democratic republic? What's the important? Where does it fit into that equation?
Well, I think it comes down ultimately to helping us govern ourselves here. I think it's important to have a well-educated and well-informed citizenry that is well-equipped for the responsibilities of citizenship in a really complicated and often dangerous world. I think public broadcasting serves that purpose extremely well, and I think the fact that we are exactly $1.35 per per citizen investment on an annual basis is good evidence of the fact that we're doing a great deal for a very small amount of money. I mean, the Heritage Foundation, which Mike ably represents, has come out not long ago with a list of budget cuts that totals $343 billion. They would include doing away with all farm subsidies, doing away with all federal highway money, and so forth and so on. I'm curious, Mike, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting is not on your list of projects to eliminate here. That may be a typo, but you ought to look into it. But
we have called for it for a long time, Pat.
But I think the record is quite clear that people value what we're doing in public broadcasting and would like to see it continue.
Pat, democracy needs free speech. It needs journalism. It does not need NPR.
Brian from Columbus, you oppose public funding for NPR and Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Welcome to the show.
Thanks.
Tell us why.
Well, I would say that I didn't necessarily have an opinion until I started to listen here to the discussion. And I guess more I'm speaking mainly to Patrick. But, I would say I'm a little bit more toward the conservative side, though I would regard myself as pretty centrist. I love NPR. I listen to it all the time. And I don't think that the discussion here is whether NPR is a good thing or not. I mean, Mike has said that he likes NPR. He listens to it. And obviously everybody that's calling in is listening to it. So
I didn't want to say that, but
we all have some interest in it. But the question is, Mike's raising philosophical objections to government funding, mm-hmm. not that NPR is a bad thing. He's saying, why should government fund it? And every time, Patrick, you've responded with Americans don't feel that way, and you're entitled to your opinion. He's not raising some sort of public opinion poll. He's raising a philosophical objection. And if I have to hear one more time from my dad, who's very, very conservative, oh, you can't trust what you hear on NPR, da-da-da-da-da, I think it's very much the case, in my opinion, that there's a perceived bias among conservatives. And so just to conclude my question, Patrick, I just wish you'd respond a little bit more directly to some of those philosophical objections. And if you're talking about a purely budgetary issue, if federal funding only accounts for $1 of that funding and membership counts for $6 of that funding, why do we need the federal funding?
Patrick?
Thank you.
Thank you. Brian.
Thank you. The first of all, to answer the second question first, excuse me, the $1 in federal funding that generates the $6 in private funding is the bedrock on which everything else rests. We can't. I mean, the smaller the station that you have, the more the reliance on the federal funding itself. In very large markets, this can be as little as a 10% reliance as far as the total budget is concerned, but in smaller markets, it's 40, 50, 60, and some places in Alaska, more than 80% of the budget it comes from this federal funding. So it's an essential part of the system that I was describing a few minutes ago. As to the philosophical point, I understand what Mike is saying. I happen to disagree with the philosophical point he is espousing here, because I think it has been proven in practice over many years that this is a broadcasting system that people do value, that they do trust, and you can say all you want to that this is a liberal bias or whatever you want to say, but people just don't agree with that.
Patrick, listen, you're doing a disservice to you, to the entity you want to represent. If you're blocking this, if you're saying, no, that is not the case, I do urge you to listen. I'm a conservative. Listen to all your critics are conservatives. The people who support you at MoveOn.org, you tweeted, NPR tweeted last week thanking MoveOn.org. MoveOn.org is a player, a liberal player. You're doing journalism for George Soros.
Let's
try to fix that problem. you know, provide some adult supervision to what's been happening rather than say, this does not exist, folks. There's nothing to look here.
I'm not saying the problem doesn't exist. I'm saying that even to the extent that the problem does exist, it's a very extreme remedy to say, well, let's just cut out all of public broadcasting. I mean, that logic just doesn't appeal to me.
Brian from Upper Arlington, you've been waiting the longest, and you're kind of on the fence on all of this. So I thought we would wrap up the listener participation with you.
Well, I think on the fence is a good statement. I actually am a contributor to WOSU. I'm one of those people that believes in paying for what they listen to. But I'm going to take the side with Mike here and disagree that funding from taxpayers should be used for NPR, mostly on principle. Not because I agree with his argument, but for the same reason I agree that we need to get out of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, that there are certain things that should be solely funded by donation. But I also want Mike to admit that even if public funding for NPR and PBS were to end, that it's not going to make a big drop in the bucket when it comes to fixing any kind of financial gap, because I think that's kind of his big argument, and it's kind of misleading. And okay. I'll go ahead and take those comments off the air.
Mike, we have about 30 seconds each for you guys. So
no, $500 million out of $61 billion is not small, folks. You do the math.
Okay. And Patrick?
Well, $500 million out of a $3.7 trillion federal budget is less than 0.001% for all the good that it's doing for 170 million Americans.
Mike, would you miss NPR?
I won't have to miss NPR. We can do very well with the donor model.
Okay. I want to thank my guests and thank all the callers, all the emailers. Sorry we couldn't get to all of you. Today, you were hearing from Heritage Foundation's Vice President of Communications, Mike Gonzalez. Mike, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Ann. Thank you, Pat.
And Patrick Butler, President and CEO of the Association of Public Television Stations. I want to remind our listeners that. Patrick, thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Ann.
I want to remind our listeners, if you want to learn more about the details as it relates to your public radio station, you can go to WOSU.org. There's at the very top, there is a message from our general manager. That's all the time we have this hour. Thank you very much for listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.